Namaste, it's Sahara Rose, and welcome back to the Highest Self Podcast, a place to discuss what makes you your soul's highest evolvement. I am so excited to be sharing with you my Dharma archetypes, which is a concept I've been working on for the past 2+ years. I got into archetypal systems in my early 20s. I remember being in Bali and ending up on this website that had these different archetypes, and it helped me so deeply understand who I was. And there are many different archetypal systems out there. I mean, even the doshas are an archetypal system, the Enneagram, the Jungian archetypes, Myers-Briggs, the goddesses. These are all different archetypal systems, even looking at the planets as planetary archetypes, as astrological archetypes, zodiac archetypes. There are so many different archetypes out there. And for me, understanding archetypes was so major because it allowed me to see myself in something greater than just who I am. And especially when you're on the path of understanding what your purpose is and discovering your dharma, it can feel so daunting and overwhelming with, you know, all of the bits and pieces of who you are and how do they fit together and how is this actually going to work into one thing. And I felt like I was so complicated and I had so many different interests and I felt like I would never figure out how to bring them all together as one. I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I was just like, I only like to cook and I'm just going to be a chef. Like that would have made my life so much more simple. But I'm like, I like to dance and spirituality and Ayurveda and this and that. And I was just not sure how it would all pan out into one dharma. And I also wasn't sure if it even would become something I would do as my life's work. I thought that maybe it would just be interests that I have that I keep as hobbies, and didn't know if it was possible and had never really met anyone that was sharing their gifts as their life's work. So brought me on this journey of studying many, many different archetypal systems. And eventually when I was writing Discover Your Dharma, I realized that I wanted to come up with Dharma archetypes. And these are archetypes that are related to your soul's purpose, your Dharma. And when I say Dharma, just think the big reason why you're here, your soul's purpose, the unique vibration that only you can carry. So it's so much more than just a job or a career or a project or a role. It's the unique expression of who you are, and it shows up in everything it is that you do. It's the red thread that ties it all together. And you can see this very well in archetypes because, and I'll begin talking about the different Dharma archetypes, but you'll see how they can show up not only in your career, but also in the way that you relate with people, in the conversations you have, even in the way that you relate to your body or your health, etc. You can see this all through the archetypes. So I'm sure I will write books in the future just diving deep into these archetypes. When I was writing about the archetypes in Discover Your Dharma, I probably wrote maybe 200 pages on just the archetypes because it was channeling and flowing through me, which I had to then, which was probably one of the different most difficult parts of the book for me, was to edit it down into just one chapter and giving you the real juice and essence of these Dharma archetypes. And then in my future courses, et cetera, giving you the rest. So I wanted to, on this episode, read with you the beginning of that chapter, chapter 6, Dharma Archetypes, as part of my upcoming book, Discover Your Dharma, which is available for pre-order right now. It comes out in less than 1 month, comes out right on January 5th internationally. And if you pre-order the book, you will receive extra bonuses that you will not get later on, including a ticket to my virtual live book launch, which is taking place on January 5th. So you'll be able to ask me your questions live on Zoom. It's going to be so much fun. I'm super excited as I so deeply miss connecting with you guys. And, you know, if it wasn't for COVID, I would be in person with you guys right now. So I'm really excited to have this virtual book launch Zoom call with you. I will also be giving you my Discover Your Dharma meditation. If you get 4 copies, I will be giving you end of chapter practices, reflective questions, journal prompts for your own Discover Your Dharma book club. And if you get 10 copies, you will get all of this information to actually share Discover Your Dharma with your team, with your class, maybe you're a yoga teacher, meditation teacher, you work in HR, how to actually teach it. And again, end of chapter practices, reflective questions, to be facilitating these types of conversations with your team. So all of these are available for you if you head over to my website, which is iamsaharrose.com/dharma. You can order your books wherever books are sold and just submit your receipt over there. That way we can email you those bonuses. If you don't submit your receipt over there, we're not going to have a way to track you down and send you over the bonuses. So be sure to send them over to iamsaharrose.com/dharma. You can find that link in the show notes, and I'm super excited to share them with you guys. So without further ado, I will begin reading from chapter 6 of Discover Your Dharma, The Dharma Archetypes. Archetypal work has been instrumental in my life because it's allowed me to see the patterns in myself and others. Archetypes are as ancient as the Vedas and as universal as consciousness. They are personality types that have existed since the beginning of time, such as the mother or the wild woman. The doshas, goddesses, Jungian archetypes, Myers-Briggs, Enneagram, and Michael teachings are archetypal systems, all of which reveal a new side of ourselves. Essentially, they allow us to connect the dots and understand ourselves on a deeper level. Through downloads from the universe, I received 9 archetypes that are related to our Dharma, which I call the Dharma archetypes. We each have chosen these archetypes as souls to fulfill our life's work before incarnation. They allow us to excel at exactly what it is our Dharma involves. They support our Dharma by making it feel natural to us. The Dharma archetypes are universal expressions of the soul types that exist within all of us and have proven to be a crucial tool that's helped me work through my own Dharmic journey and guide others through theirs. Knowing your Dharma archetype will help you understand why you are so drawn to certain things and give you permission to fully step into the embodiment of who you are. The Dharma archetypes build off of the doshas, but further categorize them into actual roles in our society. When you begin reading about the Dharma archetypes, you'll likely recognize your friends, family, and yourself pretty instantly. These archetypes are universal. You'll find them in Kenya, China, Peru, England, and any other part in the world, as our souls know no borders. I believe that the universe encoded us with these Dharma archetypes so that we can naturally come into balance as a whole society. If we all had the same personalities, gifts, and traits, there'd be no such thing as talent. If we all had the exact same capabilities, there'd be no such thing as an incredible singer or artist or healer or inventor. Everything would just be the same and therefore boring. The universe did not design you to be well-rounded like your school's college counselor may have told you to be. It designed you to be you. I like to think of the universe playing The Sims when I think about the Dharma archetypes. If you aren't a Sims nerd like I was, let me fill you in. In this epic computer game, you create your own humans and design their personalities before sticking them in a house together. You're able to decide how outgoing, organized, patient, active, or even flirtatious each person is going to be. I always made one super introverted with a love of organization so he would keep the house clean. Also, Coz Rosebud for tons of Sims money. You're welcome. Just like The Sims, the universe designed us to have a variety of skills, interests, and talents so that together we would make the world whole. There is always someone who loves to do the things you despise. So why force yourself to fit into another person's shoes when you were born to be the Sims that the universe created? Now, let's get into the Dharma archetype specifically. Though you alone embody your unique expression, you share a similar archetype with others who are meant to do similar work, though in their own unique ways. There are 9 archetypes, and just like the doshas, we are a combination of all 9s, but in varying amounts. This is not like one of those personality quizzes where only one result applies to you and you skip over the rest. You can rank high in multiple archetypes as well as low in more than one. One archetype may shine through, or 2 may be close to equal. Some of your archetypes may not have awakened yet, and some may have already completed their role. The more self-aware you become, the more your archetype will reveal. This is why meditative practices such as dance therapy, meditation, introspection, journaling, breath work, sound baths, and plant medicine are so important. They open up aspects of our souls that we were not aware of yet. As you continue to read this book, your consciousness will expand and your archetypes will become more and more clear to you. Feel into each of these archetypes as you read the descriptions. Who comes to mind when you think of this archetype, and how do you feel about them? Are there certain archetypes you know you were meant to embody but haven't yet? Do some feel totally foreign to you? This is feedback from your soul. It's normal to feel some tingling, shortness of breath, tears, excitement, or even fear as you read them. This comes from the reunion between you and your soul. Discovering your Dharma archetype is like coming back home. So next in the book, I offer a full Dharma archetype assessment. So in this assessment, you're able to fully go into it and rank the archetypes in order, but I've created a shortened version of it over on my website at dharmaarchetypequiz.com. Over there, it's a shortened version. It's going to tell you your top two Dharma archetypes. So I would recommend doing that today, maybe hitting pause, doing that quiz, or doing it when you're done listening to this episode to learn more about yours. I'm sure as I speak about the archetypes a bit, you'll be able to figure out which ones you're highest in, which ones may not feel as comfortable for you, but you can also do the quiz at dharmaarchetypequiz.com. The link is in the show notes, and then do the full assessment in my book. So I've written extensively about each of the archetypes in the book, as well as the chakras of each archetype, meaning the psychosomatic wheels of energy in the body. So how they relate to feeling grounded, sensual, in their power, in their heart, sharing their voice, using their intuition, receiving downloads of ideas. So each of these things is related to a unique chakra, which is an energy center in the body. So I actually break down the chakras of each of the archetypes in the book and tell you if it's balanced, out of balance, excess, depleted, etc. So right now I will give a quick little breakdown of each of the Dharma archetypes and then allow you to dive further into it in the book. So we'll start with the teacher. So the teacher is someone who really goes through life learning a lesson, teaching that lesson. That's actually their lens of experiencing life through. They are someone that as soon as they go through something, they actually kind of need to teach it because that allows them to completely transmute whatever the lesson was about. So if you're someone who, you know, overcame a heartbreak and then before you know it, you're helping all your friends with heartbreak and then you want to be a heartbreak coach and set up a heartbreak course, like that's that teacher in you. Or if you're someone who it's easier for you to learn something by teaching it to others, that's that teacher. So teacher is my second archetype. It's one that's a super high one for me. So for me in school, like when I was trying to understand something, I would imagine myself explaining it to someone else. And even still today, when I have ideas, I'll often record a voice memo, you know, to the gods of me explaining it, even though there's no one listening to it, because it helps me to understand things by teaching it to others. So if you're a teacher, you have natural leadership abilities. You also have a deeply empathetic side to you because teachers aren't good teachers if they're just spewing information and not connecting to their students. To be a good teacher is to be connected both to the vata, the creativity, letting the ideas channel through, as well as the kapha, which is you really connecting to your students and seeing what they need. So it's both. And every teacher has a different style, and it really is finding your own dharmas, finding that style of teacher that you are. Are you a super no BS teacher? Are you a really nurturing teacher? And that will probably be coupled with what your other archetypes are. So if you're a teacher warrior, it's gonna have more of that no BS style. If you're a teacher nurturer, it will have more of that really caring, compassionate style. I'm visionary teacher, so it's teaching on the universe and on the way that the world is going and on these really, you know, big spiritual topic. So that's how my archetypes are paired together. So teachers, we can recognize them, we can see ourselves in them and know that they're here for a reason. They're here to help us teach. They're here to teach us everything from algebra to, being a better friend and everything in between. And that's what's also going to make them feel the most fulfilled in their human experience when they're either in front of their classroom or in front of their camera or even one-on-one with someone, but they're in the role of the teacher and they're imparting knowledge. So that's really their dharma. That's what they're here to do. They are here to share knowledge, to be that vessel. In Sanskrit, the word is the guru. The guru is someone who helps illuminate the path for you, and that essentially is the role of the teacher. So the next one is the nurturer. So the nurturer is here to care and connect. They find their sense of purpose in caring for others. They are very, very empathic, and they can always feel what another person needs. So they have that kapha energy that they can feel like exactly what someone's going through. They can hold space really well. They can listen. Being around them feels like a warm hug, and that's what they're here to do. They actually feel the best when they're deep in conversation with someone and, you know, getting past some roadblocks and really deeply connecting in a heart-to-heart level. So a nurturer is going to walk through life probably finding people who deeply need the healing and also finding themselves in being able to fulfill that role. So it's a part of their dharma. It's what they're here to do. And every single archetype has its light and its shadow aspect. So for the teacher, that can be teaching and not connecting to the students and, you know, thinking that you're imparting the knowledge, but you're actually just lecturing or being preachy. For the nurturer, that's not putting up healthy boundaries. So if you're someone that keeps saying, people take advantage of my niceness, or I don't know how to set healthy boundaries with people and I end up overextending myself, well, that's the nurturer shadow side. Because the nurturers want to help and they want to be there and it's so easy for them and it feels so natural for them, it can be hard for them to say no, and it can be hard for them to tune into what their own body needs because they're so deeply connected to what other bodies need. They're very body people as well. They like to work with their hands, really connect, touch, be here in the physical. So it's really important for them to set those boundaries, take care of themselves, and choose when they really want to be in that nurturing role, not doing it out of scarcity or guilt or shame or lack, but doing it because they know it's just the natural radiance that's coming out from them of being so fulfilled and in alignment with themselves. So that is the nurturer archetype. I like to think of Oprah as a really beautiful example of this. And she's an example that the nurturer doesn't necessarily mean you're a one-on-one counselor or coach or in HR, but you can even be in front of the masses if that's what you want. But the way that Oprah is doing it, for example, is she's on a set or in front of a bunch of people, but she's sitting down next to someone having a deep conversation. And that's what the nurturer loves to do. And that's that kapha earth energy. So is that you? Do you see yourself in or your friends in this nurturer role? So the next one is the visionary. Ooh. So this is my primary archetype. The visionary is here to be a bridge for the new paradigm. They are especially tapped into universal source consciousness and are able to express their visions through them, through the gift of words. So they are change makers. They thrive in leadership where the focus is their message. So their art is really their speech. They speak enthusiastically, charismatically, and with great spirit. And more than what they say, it's the energy they give off. It's a transmission. So in Rose Gold Goddesses, in my membership community yesterday, I was speaking about how the way of the goddess is not about telling people what to do, but it's about being the embodiment and letting that be an energy exchange, which can speak so much greater than words. And this natural ability to do so is the gift of the visionary. They are sharing an experience that transmutes beyond what words are capable of doing. So they're the type of people who really speak in a stream of consciousness, a greater idea comes through them, and they're just tapped in and listening. So when I'm doing these podcasts and I'm just on my solo cast channeling, or if I'm writing my books, that's that exact feeling. So a lot of you guys I know who have taken the quiz are sharing with me that you're visionaries as well, and maybe you haven't fully tapped into that entire channel that you have access to, but seeing other people doing it, you know, a lot of you guys email me saying, you know, when I first started listening to you, I was triggered. You were doing all the things I wanted to do. And now I've realized that you've shown me what's possible. So sometimes the very people who might trigger you the most might be an example of that archetype that is fully expressed. So the visionary has this natural gift of using their words and their energy to create universal change. And their focus is inspiration. Their focus is the higher vision. They are really looking for the future of humanity. So it's less one-on-one than the nurturer. The nurturer is like, it starts from within. Let's dive in. You and like the doula is the nurturer. The coach is the nurturer. Whereas the visionary is more of the speaker, the thought leader, the author, and you can be both, you know? So the shadow side of the visionary, and there's a shadow side to everything, is first of all, being overly idealistic, thinking we're just going to solve all these problems and just do it. And if we just believe in it, we'll just do it. And sometimes they can, you know, look over all of the steps that really need to be done or even bypass over what people are experiencing right now. The other side to them is they can definitely come off as preachy. You know, have you ever tried to like give someone an inspirational talk when they're not in the mood for it? So it's really important for a visionary to share when they are being received, when it is desired, not, you know, show up and try to change someone's life who isn't asking for it and therefore is not receptive to it. So I've definitely learned that the hard way of don't try to care more about another person's transformation than they do, because then the visionary ends up getting really bogged down and like, why aren't they changing? Why aren't they shifting? I'm doing all my things. And then the energy isn't being used for what it's here to be used for, which is more of a big picture universal shift. And it ends up so attached to one person's experience and also not received if that person is not in alignment with it at the time. So if you are a visionary, pay attention to that and focus on where your energy is invited. So the next is the entrepreneur. So the entrepreneur is really here to address the problems of society through business solutions. So they see a business not as something that's necessarily just for income, but for income and impact. They are deeply impact driven. So it's not just about, you know, I want to make that money bag and leave. It's about, well, I want to make that money bag because I know that money talks in our society and I'll be able to create XYZ change. And they also know that oftentimes businesses can create a more tangible goal than a lofty idea. So for example, let's say we all want to save the environment. So the visionary may give an inspirational speech about how we are all the earth and Gaia is connected to us, and we as humans are children of the earth and we must care for our mother and look at it from that more spiritual lens. Whereas the entrepreneur will be like, okay, if we want to help the earth, let's look at one issue. Okay, plastic straws. Let's cut down plastic straw consumption by 200% by 2030. And we'll set up this business and we'll look up, should we do the bamboo straws? Should we do the steel straws? They'll team up with a researcher, which I'll get into, and then actually create that business solution. So you can see here, it has much more of a pitta fire energy to it, a much more of a masculine energy to it. It knows that sometimes you can just say a lot of big things and it doesn't actually lead to something. So it has this really, you know, pragmatic, grounded, organized sensibility to it. And that's part of what it's here to do. It's here to really create businesses that help the world thrive and are sustainable. So if you are someone that is an entrepreneur, you're looking at systems, you're looking at longevity, you're looking at something to scale, and you're looking at really creating systemic impact using business solutions. So entrepreneur is my like fourth, fifth archetype. I definitely have it, but it's not my main thing that's driving me over. However, it is an archetype that I love to step into. So we can have these and in varying amounts. And as we know, there's a shadow side to everything too. And that shadow side of the entrepreneur is they can be super just focused on the goal that they can forget about themselves, forget about everything else in their lives, not have a social life, friends. Like it could just be only about their work. And they see so much of their work as an extension of who they are that they can often feel like their worthiness is tied to their productivity. So if you're an entrepreneur, look out for that one. I know I've felt it before. So the next one is the artiste, the artist. So the artist is here to put beauty on this earth. They are channels of divine expression through art, song, design, poetry, dance, graphics, flowers, interior design. There are so many different modalities in which they can bring beauty to this earth with. So they are super, super sensitive to their surroundings. They are typically introverted. And the reason why is because they're picking up on so much energy all the time. And that's what makes them such beautiful artists, that they're multisensory. And the other side of that is they can get really overwhelmed, especially by loud sounds and noises and a lot of people. They do their best when they're on their own. They're really lone wolves at the heart of it. And when they are by themselves, they can listen to their thoughts and be that creative expression. And oftentimes it takes time for the artist to really feel safe and comfortable. And the artist can actually be very, very judgmental on themselves as well. So it does require a bit of nurturing that they have to do on themselves. So the artist is the type of person that everything they do is going to have some element of beauty and style to it. Like their Instagram feed, the way that they dress, like their business cards, everything they do is just going to be like very beautiful. And that really matters to them. So the shadow side is sometimes they can be very disconnected from their physical bodies. They can, you know, we've all heard of the artists like Frida Kahlo, et cetera, who might go into like a manic depressive state or deal with a lot of emotional ups and downs. So they can oftentimes feel that vata imbalance. So feeling frazzled, insomnia, anxiety, panic attacks, and just a lot of activity in the mind because there's that disconnection of the grounding in the body. So as an artist, you are here to bring beauty to this world, and it's important for you to connect back to your roots, connect back to your physical vessel, and not put so much pressure on your art being quote unquote perfect or received or even monetized per se, and letting yourself have a place that you could just be the artist without being judged. So this is my third archetype, visionary, teacher, and then artist. So you'll notice that everything I do is going to have this like beautiful element. I'm someone that will spend forever, for example, on my yogic path deck. Like I need the gold foil. I need the mandalas. I need the lotus. And there's so many like subliminal, like Vedic symbols in there. And that type of thing for me really matters. And some of you guys have been following me on Instagram, and I just moved to a new place. And that process is so important to me of creating my ideal home, because I'm so deeply affected by my surroundings and space. And for me, being in a space that, you know, for me, it's not so much about clutter. Clutter actually doesn't bother me. It's just about not having things that are beautiful. That to me really matters. And that's my artist archetype. And that's the part of me that just wants to dance and use my body as my vessel of being the artist. So some artists might use their voice, some might use instruments, some might use their drawings. So as an artist, it's really finding your mediums and letting those mediums be an expression of who you are. So are you an artist? Does that resonate with you? I know a lot of us as children were artists and told that's not sustainable or that's not going to pay your bills. And we've shut that part of ourselves down. So if you're an artist, I mean, I remember some of my happiest memories as a kid were just art projects. Like, do you guys remember those boxes where it was like, make your own stained glass, make your own bracelet, make your own like pottery thing. And I just loved them. Like, just to get one of those boxes and open it up, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much I can do here. So I actually want to like look up fun art projects to do just to let that inner artist of me just thrive without it even being part of my business per se, because then I know the more I cultivate that energy, the more it will show up in everything else that I do. So the next Dharma archetype is the researcher. Now, the researcher is here to observe the world, the object of their study. The world is here to be analyzed through their lens. They came here to deeply understand the way things are as they are on a deep level. So they're the type of person that will read something on Instagram and be like, I'm not going to share that until I research this, or hear something and go down the rabbit hole, do all the hours of research. They aren't quick to take action because they don't want to be hasty. They don't want to jump to conclusions. They know how complex and nuanced this world is. So they really want to deeply study things and get to know why they are. They really have this childlike curiosity to them. Like, they're, you know, as a kid, you're like, why is the sky blue? Why is the grass green? Why are the boats that? that's how the researcher is for their life. Like, they'll see something and there isn't really an emotional response. It's more like, why did that person do that? Fascinating. You know, it's like a level of detachment and seeing the world from that observer lens. So that's why I say the world is the object of their study. So researchers are integral to society because they're willing to go places that most of us will not, which are into the details. They are the type of people to obviously be in the sciences, in the labs, creating technology and shaping the world of tomorrow. They're also putting together history's lost puzzle pieces and helping us also understand why the world is the way it is today by looking to the past. So they can oftentimes be very past-focused researchers, history, et cetera, or future-focused of research and innovation. But both are coming through this desire to draw data. That really matters to them. They really care about the facts. So again, we can feel that masculine energy to it, but it has more of a Vata masculine energy because it's in the mind. It's not about taking action. In fact, the shadow side of the researcher is they often have a really tough time taking action because they always feel like there's more to know and they don't want to do something too quickly without knowing enough. But the thing is, we're never going to know it all. And there's always going to be another book to read and another study to learn about, and another 20 websites to go down. So the shadow side of that is oftentimes researchers might spend their whole life researching, and not doing anything with that research and always feeling like they still don't have enough. So that's why researchers really pair well with some of the other archetypes, like a researcher and an entrepreneur pair together. Well, the researcher can do the research on where's the environment going? Okay, how much is the bamboo straw gonna cost? What does that process look like, et cetera? And then the entrepreneur creates the business with it. Or a researcher warrior. The researcher, you know, oftentimes they actually really might clash heads, but the researcher will go deep into the details and the warrior just wants to take action. So you might have both sides to yourself, or if you're really just in one, then pair up with someone else to really bring your vision to life. So researchers in a way are a bit similar to the artist in that they love to be alone with their research, with their art, but the artist is not doing so for a purpose. In fact, the artist, they might like roll their eyes when you're like, what's the purpose of this art? Or like, what does this mean? It's like, it just is. It just is. It doesn't need to have a purpose. Whereas the researcher is really trying to understand something. There's a reasoning behind it. Logic really matters to them. So for example, and I'll talk more about the next one, the activist as well, but the activist really needs a cause around something. And then the researcher, on the other hand, they might be not so quick to want to solve something. They would rather study it. So think of like the anthropologist who would go to an African tribe and research and sit and observe what's happening there. But then the activist might be like, oh my God, there's, you know, female mutilation happening here. There's this, we need to stop this. Whereas, you know, and I studied sociocultural anthropology in school, but as an anthropologist, you're not allowed to assert yourself because that's imposing on a different culture. But the activist might say, but this is a violation of human rights. And then you can see two archetypes and they're two very different perspectives on things. And this is an ongoing battle and conversation that's happening in anthropology as well. So the next one is the entertainer. So the entertainer is here to make you laugh and cry and smile and gasp and ponder and every emotion in between. Making you feel is their greatest joy. So the entertainers are the type to take something boring, like, you know, when you're leaving a concert and you're stuck in that parking lot for like 8 hours. And the entertainer, if you have an entertainer in the car, they're like telling jokes, they're like doing karaoke in there. They're taking this boring moment in time and taking it as an opportunity to entertain. They actually really come alive in situations like that. They're like, I got my stage, I want to entertain. So that's what really makes them feel alive performing, whether it's in front of a crowd, in front of a camera, but they really see this life as a performance. And the shadow side of that is then sometimes that can blur the lines between who they truly are and who they're pretending to be. And sometimes they might not even know which is which. So the entertainer is one that oftentimes our society really celebrates. You know, as kids, we want to be actors, we want to be ballerinas, we want to be on stage. And now, you know, according to some polls, like 80% of young kids want to be YouTube stars. So like, why do they want to be YouTube stars? Well, the reason why is because they go on YouTube and they see these people are happy, they're joyful, they seem to be in alignment with their purpose. So they think then if they're looking like they're in alignment with their purpose and they seem a lot happier than mom and dad, I must want to be a YouTube star. So not everyone is meant to be an entertainer, but we often just see it glamorized in our media. So we might want to be an entertainer when really what we're loving is the feeling that that person is experiencing and we're wanting that in themselves. So I do think there are a lot of people who throw themselves into thinking that they want to be entertainers, then realizing that underneath it all, it was maybe paired with their researcher archetype if they really want to study the character, or paired with their activist, they want to create films that create change, or paired with the nurturer, etc. But the entertainer in its pure role is just here to be that vessel to make people feel emotions. And it really is an ancient archetype. If you look at the jesters back in the days of, you know, the kingdoms, they have always been a part of our society. So I really think of Jim Carrey as a prime example of this. He's very Vata and an entertainer. And really he morphs and he shifts into his different characters and they help him better understand the human psyche. So he's very entertainer visionary. So the entertainer just feels the most alive when they are able to be witnessed. They really just want to be seen. They want to be accepted. And they want a space where they can share their gifts and allow people to go through an experience. So if you're someone who maybe you did musical theater growing up, or you were a dancer, or you just really want to get on TikTok, or there's a part of you that really wants to entertain, that's your entertainer archetype. So I know for myself, entertainer definitely wasn't one of my main archetypes, but as I've, you know, spent more time on social media, et cetera, really with my focus more so being in the visionary teacher space, the entertainer in me started to come up of like, why not make this fun? Like, why not make this engaging? Like, why make it boring? So sometimes through doing your dharma and embodying your main archetypes, other archetypes come online. So that's why I keep saying it's not just one archetype that you are. You're really a combination of all nine, but in varying amounts. And certain experiences, even traumas, can bring forth different archetypes as well. And I'll do maybe a whole other episode, and I write more about it in the book. But when I see even traumas, for example, as a child, you may have been in a family situation where your younger siblings really needed you. And you learned that if I can tell jokes and make them laugh, then I can steer away the attention from what's really happening here. So you may have taken on the role of the entertainer because you wanted to make your younger siblings laugh and feel comfortable and safe, because you knew that there may not have been underlying safety in the home. So that trauma may have made you step into being the entertainer and trying to make everyone else laugh because you felt like it's your responsibility to do so. And then when you do healing on that trauma, that desire to make everyone laugh and feeling like you're responsible to be the life of the party might actually go away. So it's really interesting to see how we could also pick certain archetypes up based off of our natural survival mechanisms. So the next one is the activist. So the activist is here to bring about social, environmental, and political change. They do not take their time here on this planet for granted, and they are dedicated to leaving the world a better place than they found it. So the activist really sees the world as a cohesive being where all people are intertwined. One person's problem is everyone's problem, and they refuse to turn a blind eye to the injustices in this world. They are a voice for the voiceless. They'll advocate for protection of the environment, the marginalized, and all living beings. And they'll live their lives in alignment with these principles, often becoming plant-based, vegan, eco-friendly, minimalist, waste-free, etc., because they just know the impact all of their decisions have, from their clothes to their cars to their meals. And they find it their dharma to educate others about also making smart choices and being smart consumers. So sometimes the scariest issues of the world, like patriarchy, slavery, mental health, transgender rights, that's what the activists want to go into. Whatever boils their heart, they are willing to step into that. They want to have the difficult conversations, and they see it as their obligation as a privileged person to be able to discuss those situations and be that voice. So of course they often go into, you know, creating their own NGOs, being speakers, lawyers, or even influencers who are sharing this type of work. So the activist is definitely one of my archetypes as well, but I'll share with you back to using the example of trauma and how that can affect you. So if I were to have studied this and taken this quiz when I was in high school, I would have said, number one, I am an activist. That is 100% me. That's who I am. However, now, you know, doing a lot of introspection and inner work since then, I realized that my desire so deeply to be an activist and to say, what are the worst issues in the world? Okay, I will go fix that. I will sacrifice myself to do that. I always thought that sacrifice was the most noble thing, that the person who sacrificed the most for the sake of humanity is the person who cares the most. I was like, okay, if it's, you know, becoming a nun and joining Mother Teresa's school in Calcutta, I'll do that. If it's going to the Peace Corps, I'll do that. And I lived with families and worked with NGOs from Peru to Nicaragua to Vietnam and so many other places. And it was coming also from a wounded place. And for me, that wounded place was, again, not feeling like I was safe, feeling like I needed someone to advocate for me, for my family, you know, my mom being a refugee, my dad being an immigrant, my uncles being political prisoners, coming from a family that has needed activists and Amnesty International and these different groups to allow us to even be here. So of course, that's going to make me realize the importance of this and that if I'm here in the US, I need to be an activist. However, I was throwing away and discarding my creative side, my desire to be the artist, my designer, to do things for the sake of doing it, for the love and the joy of doing it, because I thought that I just needed to save the world. It was my personal responsibility. Like, you're here, you single-handedly, you gotta save the world, girl. And it's a lot of pressure to put on one person. So I share this because for myself, being super in that activist role, again, going to school to study international human rights law, that for me was coming from not this exuberant joy, but coming more from the sense of guilt and responsibility. And as I did more healing around that and realizing I am not single-handedly responsible for healing the world, I am not, you know, at fault for being here, I am not indebted now that I'm here, that archetype within me was able to rest and breathe. And now it still is, you know, one of my top five archetypes, depending on what's happening in the world. But it's coming from a much more healed place. Whereas before it was like, I got to organize this protest and stage this entire thing in my school cafeteria to show people what's happening in Guantanamo Bay. And we see this often like the angry activist. And that's where that comes from. It's like, why doesn't anyone care as much as I do? So that activist can often feel really alone, can feel like I'm putting in so much work for humanity and no one else is caring as much as I do, and I'm doing this for all of us. And often feeling really jaded by the world and feeling really hurt. So that's why it's important, if you are an activist listening to this, I feel you, and know that you are able to live a life that you love and that you don't have to sacrifice your lifetime for people who are in compromising experiences. And let me flip it and reverse it, that those experiences are part of your karma, are part of your unique upbringing, so that passion will be there, so you can care, so you can be that voice, so you can have that experience. For myself, being an activist is a major part of my dharma here. Had I not had the experiences I had had, I wouldn't have cared. If had I been in a bubble, I wouldn't have even known about this stuff. So oftentimes we gotta go deeper into it, bring about healing, and then we come back and realize what a gift it is. So if you are an activist, it's not about healing that part of you and accepting the world totally as it is and like being like, okay, well, I guess everything's perfect, so I'm out, gonna go paint. It's not about that either. That desire for you to bring about change is because that's part of your soul mission here. And I remember I went to a talk by Marianne Williamson a couple of years ago. And in this talk, it was the spiritual conference. And she was really, really sharing a call to action to people saying that you're never going to be totally healed. And sometimes the best healing that you can do is to put your tears on a shelf, go out there, save the world, come back, and realize how lucky you are. And that to me was a huge wake-up call, because sometimes we go from being the activist to going into spirituality and then maybe discarding ourselves from that side of ourselves, that side of ourselves that really did care so much about humanity, and then this feeling of really focusing only on the self. And while that reflection is a needed part of your spiritual development, it's not the end goal. You know, true dharma is when we shift from me to we. So I believe that we truly are all here as activists. And some people are going to naturally be able to speak about issues with more ease than others. For some people, being in the activist role is so scary. They don't know how to talk about global issues. They feel completely overwhelmed by it. And some people are really, not everyone is meant to be, you know, a global voice or a voice on social justice issues. I mean, we've seen that ourselves this year, that definitely not everyone is equipped to speak about these things. However, if you are the activist or you're finding yourself feeling impassioned by creating change, you know, the difference between a pure visionary and a pure activist, and you can be both, like Marianne, like myself, is a pure visionary may just be really focused on the grand scheme of things, the new paradigm, the shifts. It could be very energetic. Whereas the activist is about, what does this mean in our lives? Let's look at what's happening physically here on this planet. Let's not bypass the fact that we are here on these, on this earth, in these earth suits, on this planet that really deeply needs our help. So let's start with the children. Let's start with the animals. Let's start with the environment. Let's figure these things out on this earth and realize that this really is an extension of our spirit. So they really do go hand in hand together. And some of us may be more in the activist space and not so aware of the more energetic principles, and some of us more in the energetic principles and completely overwhelmed by how heavy some of this earthly stuff is. So it's really about finding the balance between the two and honoring what's here to show up for you. So that is the activist. And then next we've got the warrior. So the warriors are here to protect. They have a really strong moral compass and a deep desire to safeguard the powerless and give voice to the voiceless. They are strong in their expression and not afraid to be themselves. They know what it's like to be weak, bullied, or taken advantage of, and they never want anyone else to be in that situation. They have strong opinions and a deep sense of what is right or wrong, often have love me, hate me personalities, and aren't here to appease anyone. They're willing to speak up and say what everyone else is thinking, even if it singles them out or alienates others. They are anchored in their own truth. So they often go into the fitness realm. I see they're very in their bodies. They really like to achieve goals. So I often see them in fitness, trainers, athletes, as well as CEOs, people in business, motivational speakers, managers, law enforcement individuals, police officers. You can definitely feel that warrior-like energy in them. So AOC, the politician, is a really great example of one. And she really is like a voice for the marginalized, and she's going to speak up. And she's the youngest congresswoman. And the reason why so many people love her and admire her so much is because she has this warrior-like energy to her that she doesn't care who she's going up against. She'll say the thing that no one else is willing to say. She really has this almost like superwoman energy to her. And that's what the warriors have. They feel like they're here to protect us. So people who are warriors, they are very quick to take action. And the shadow side of that is sometimes they can be so quick to take action that they haven't fully sat with something enough or researched or looked at the different sides. They can be very dualistic. It's right or it's wrong. You're with us or you're against us. So it's important for them to also cultivate the awareness of all of the nuances in any situation. And then when they are in alignment, take that action. So warriors were given a great deal of energy because they're meant to find solutions. They'll often also find themselves as entrepreneurs because they can't stand to take directions from others. So they need that sense of freedom in everything it is that they can do. They also really love to work in teams. So one thing about them is they don't want to be the lone wolf. It's kind of the opposite of the artist there. They really like to be part of something greater than themselves. They like that camaraderie. So using the army as an example, like army is literally training warriors. So it's all about your camaraderie, your teamwork, coming together, using your physical body, your strength, setting goals, protecting, being the voice for the voiceless. And, you know, the difference between the warrior and the activist is the activist has that similar pitta, fiery energy, also wants to be the voice for the voiceless. But the activist is only going to be focused on social change, environmental change, et cetera. It's always for the progress of society and humanity. Whereas a pure warrior may not. Again, they could channel that warrior energy into destruction. They can channel it towards their sports team, towards winning their legal battle, whatever it is. So it's beautiful when it can go hand in hand, because then you can use that warrior energy of standing up for the cause towards something that's going to bring about change, which is the activism, but they're not the exact same. So you'll often see warriors in Wall Street, in finance, you know, just doing things where they get to reach their goals and use their energy and grit. And then sometimes you'll see activists who don't have that warrior energy. They're more in, you know, in the one-on-one, passing along flyers or spreading awareness, et cetera. So they're not the same thing. There's a difference to their energy. However, again, there's beauty when you can bring them together hand in hand. So these are all 9 of the Dharma archetypes. So I'll just read them all out again and briefly share the dharmas of each one. So the teacher's dharma is to teach and guide. The nurturer, here to connect and care. The visionary, here to usher in the new paradigm. The entrepreneur, to create profit and impact. Artist, to create beauty. Researcher, to understand deeply. Entertainer, to make people feel. Activist, to create a more just world. Warrior, to protect and lead. So, which archetypes do you relate to? You can head over to dharmaarchetypequiz.com, take the quiz, it will tell you your top 2, and know that you are all of them, but in varying amounts. And your dharma is really about cultivating a way that you can shine in the archetypes that you are strongest in. It's not about being 100% totally balanced in all of the archetypes. In fact, that could never work, because a lot of them juxtapose each other in many different ways. But it's finding the ones that you are the strongest in, that feel like home for you, and letting your dharma be an expression of that. And the next chapter in the book, chapter 7, is all about finding your dharma blueprint. So this is my 5-step proprietary process that I actually guide you through, finding what it is that you're meant to take action on right now, using your dharma archetype, the medium you're the best at, obstacle, and a couple other things that I share with you in the book, to actually create a step-by-step framework that you can go through. Because to me, one of the greatest questions I had was, you know, I discovered different archetypes I had within myself. And I was like, okay, now what do I do with it? How do I take action on it? How do I show up in my life like that? So that's what your Dharma blueprint is about. So you can read this all, dive more into the Dharma archetypes over in my book, Discover Your Dharma, A Vedic Guide to Finding Your Purpose. Again, you can pre-order that and receive your exclusive pre-order bonuses at iamsaharrose.com/dharma. The link is in the show notes. And On top of all the bonuses, I'm doing a really fun giveaway. So I am randomly selecting one person to do a one-on-one Dharma consultation with them, where I will actually be working with you, coaching you to help you find your Dharma. I'll also be giving away a couple Rose Gold Goddesses annual memberships, some Doshas and Dharma tanks, as well as the bonuses for the people who pre-order and submit the receipt. So again, head over to iamsaharrose.com/dharma. You'll be able to see it all there. And I'm so deeply excited to share this book with you. Thank you so much for diving deep, for asking the big questions, and for understanding what your soul's purpose is. The world deeply needs it right now. And I thank you. Namaste.